Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
World leaders scramble to deal with the Ebola crisis. Burkina Faso's government wants to change term limits on the president. I'm Dave DeForest reporting from Washington. The United States' new Ebola czar is expected to meet today with President Barack Obama. Also, a new contingent of Cuban doctors and nurses departed today for Guinea and Liberia. They will go there to help with the Ebola outbreak. The head of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies says the Ebola outbreak could be contained within 4 to 6 months if the right steps are followed.
So if one responds to scale, you know, that good contact tracing is made, good isolation, you know, good treatment, you know, of the cases which are confirmed, you know, good safe and dignified burials of deceased people, all of that accompanied, you know, by a community sensitization to break the chain, it will be possible, as it was possible in the past, to contain this epidemic, you know, within 4 to 6 months.
His comments come as the World Health Organization convened a meeting of its emergency committee on Ebola. The talks are expected to take 1 or 2 days. Burkina Faso's government is launching a new push to end a 2-term limit on the presidency. The country's interior minister said Tuesday the government will present a bill to parliament calling for a referendum on the issue. Supporters of longtime president Blaise Compaoré have pushed for changes that will enable him to run for re-election next year. Next year is when his second term comes to an end. The opposition leader in the country said the opposition will fight the proposed referendum. This is VOA News. The AFP reports that the leaders of Ethiopia, Kenya, and Uganda met today with South Sudan President Salva Kiir. It is the latest effort by African leaders to bring an end to the civil war that is racking South Sudan. The regional bloc IGAD declined to offer details of the meetings. The AFP quotes South Africa's finance minister, Nhlanhla Nene, as saying the country's economy is at a turning point. He says the government must limit spending and raise taxes to eliminate South Africa's increasing deficit. As the minister presented his midterm budget, he said this year's economic growth in South Africa should be 1.4%. He put the blame for the country's problem with slow growth on the global economic environment. The AFP says doctors are reporting the deaths of 2 people as the result of Ebola-related rioting in Sierra Leone. The report says violence broke out when health officials tried to get a blood sample from an elderly woman suspected of having Ebola. Several buildings were attacked as youths roamed through the streets shouting, "No more Ebola." A bomb exploded outside Cairo University today, the AFP reported. An official says at least 9 people were wounded in the blast, including a senior officer. Many policemen and soldiers have been killed in recent militant attacks in Egypt. Dozens of gunshots rang out in Canada's Parliament buildings in Ottawa today. A gunman shot and killed a soldier guarding a nearby National War Memorial. Police say one gunman was shot and killed in the main Parliament building. Heavily armed Canadian police surrounded buildings downtown, saying they are searching for one or more suspects. Ottawa police say shots have also been fired at a nearby shopping mall. A spokesman for Prime Minister Stephen Harper says he left the area of the shootings and is safe. North Korea says a detained American was freed this week following repeated requests from U.S. President Barack Obama. The brief note by the North's official news agency said Jeffrey Fowell was released on orders of leader Kim Jong-un. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said no quid pro quo deal had been struck with the North Koreans in the Fowell case.
No, there was no quid pro quo. And we are very concerned about the remaining American citizens who are in North Korea, and we have great hopes that North Korea will see the benefit of releasing them also as soon as possible.
The tourist had visited North Korea and was arrested for leaving a Bible at a North Korean restaurant. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Guinean President Alpha Conde has called on the nation's retired doctors to serve in the fight against Ebola. President Conde says the experience of retired medical personnel is needed.
That's Karim Kamara reporting from the Guinean capital, Conakry. Details coming up. Also in the news, the World Health Organization says tuberculosis remains one of the world's deadliest communicable diseases. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the World Health Organization has updated the figures for Ebola cases and deaths. It says as of October 19th, there have been 9,936 cases of the disease in Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Spain, and the United States. And there have been 4,877 deaths. Most of the cases and deaths by far have occurred in Liberia. The WHO is holding an emergency committee meeting today in Geneva to discuss global screening measures and travel restrictions. The deliberations come amid growing international concern about the Ebola epidemic. At an Ebola conference in China, the General Secretary of the International Red Cross and Red Crescent Society said closing borders will not effectively stop the spread of the virus. El Hadj Issi said that if authorities can effectively contain the virus in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, the epidemic can be stopped within 6 months. Here in the United States, the AP reports that a self-monitoring program will begin for everyone traveling to the U.S. from the three West African affected countries. The monitoring would last for 21 days and include health workers, federal employees, and journalists. Tom Frieden, head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, says those individuals will receive kits containing thermometers and a logbook for recording health information. He says people will be given information on who to call if symptoms appear and a card to present to healthcare providers if they seek treatment. The program starts Monday in six states where more than 70% of those travelers arrive. It is expected to expand later. Also, Washington has limited entry of citizens of the three West African countries to five designated airports: New York, New Jersey, Atlanta, Washington, and Chicago. The airports have increased their screening procedures. A Liberian arriving at the airport in Newark, New Jersey yesterday was taken to a local hospital after airport officials determined he had a fever. No word yet on his condition. In Sierra Leone, gunfire broke out during a clash between police and youths wielding machetes and shotguns in the eastern town of Kaidu. The youths were protesting efforts by healthcare workers to quarantine an elderly woman. The woman died, but the cause of her death is not certain. The town is now under curfew. More than 90 Cuban doctors and nurses are arriving in West Africa today for six-month assignments to treat Ebola patients. They will be posted in Guinea and Liberia. More than 160 Cuban health workers are already working in Sierra Leone. Meanwhile, the freelance photographer who contracted Ebola in West Africa 2 weeks ago has been declared free of the virus by officials in an Omaha, Nebraska hospital. Doctors in Spain also declared a Madrid nurse free of the virus. She contracted Ebola while caring for a priest who contracted the virus in Sierra Leone. He later died at the Madrid hospital. The Guinean president, Alpha Conde, has called on the nation's retired doctors to serve in the fight against Ebola. President Conde says the experience of retired medical personnel is needed. Karim Kamara reports from the Guinean capital, Conakry.
After nearly getting Ebola under control in August, Guinea's outbreak is worsening as new cases in previously virus-free areas have been reported daily. Efforts to spread awareness of how Ebola is spreading continues to meet with resistance by many in Guinea who either don't believe Ebola is real or are fearful that medical personnel are actually spreading the deadly disease. Another major issue here is a lack of healthcare workers, and many of those in the field do not have the experience or training to contain the spread. There have been numerous cases reported where doctors are refusing to put on medical gloves or take other precautions. Ebola is spread by contact with body fluids from a sick person or the bodies of those died from the virus. With that in mind, President Alpha Conde calling on all retired medical personnel to join the battle. He says that collective experience is needed to educate health workers who are at risk or spreading the risk to others. Speaking in Conakry Tuesday, President Conde tapped into patriotism to inspire Guineans to tackle Ebola like Nigeria, which has been declared free of the virus.
La seule guerre que nous avons aujourd'hui, c'est la guerre contre Ebola. Quand on a une guerre, personne n'a la retraite.
He says Guinea is at war with Ebola, and during a time of war, no one retires. He is calling on retired healthcare workers to think of themselves as soldiers. In case this appeal to a sense of duty to the country wasn't enough, the president said he was prepared to make it compulsory. He says, I am calling you, and most of you are heeding that call. But those of you who resist, you will be forced to join the Ebola fight. Many retired medical personnel expressed their willingness to join in the fight, and those like Professor Amara Sissé say this move will save lives.
Ce qui veut dire que les méthodes de prévention doivent être très systématisées.
He says the method in the fight against Ebola must be systematic, and this is an opportunity to achieve that by improving our health sector. President Conde this week has also met with a cross-section of medical students to recruit their skills. Guinea has recorded more than 1,500 cases on Ebola, with more than 860 deaths. The outbreak began in Guinea in December, has spread to Sierra Leone, Liberia, Nigeria, and Senegal. Both Nigeria and Senegal have been declared Ebola-free this month, raising hopes the outbreak can be contained and stopped. Karim Kamara, for VOA News, Conakry.
World Bank economists predict much of Africa will continue moderate growth, a little over 5% over the next 2 years. But there are three exceptions to their forecast. The West African countries stricken with Ebola. The crippling effects of the virus on trade have put a damper on their once promising growth rates. From Washington, William Eagle reports.
World Bank figures are beginning to confirm the impact of the crisis on the economies of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. New data shows the service sectors of the three countries have been especially hard hit. The bank's latest report says wholesale and retail traders in Liberia report drops in business of up to 75% from the same period last year. It says gasoline and diesel sales in the country are down by 21 and 35% respectively. And since the onset of the crisis, hotel occupancy across the three countries is down by 13 to 40%. Economists say the public and political response to Ebola is affecting economic activity in the three countries. The Food and Agriculture Organization says about 90% of Sierra Leone's most productive plots are not being farmed, due in part, it says, to the fear among farmers of sharing tools and government restrictions on movement aimed at preventing the spread of the disease. Some airports are closed, as are the borders, which are crucial to merchants. Many people are afraid to go to West Africa's hot and crowded markets for fear of getting the virus. Ebola is spread by bodily fluids from an infected person. Sierra Leone and Liberia are recovering from long civil wars, and we're bouncing back with growth rates approaching 10%. Francisco Ferreira, the World Bank's chief economist for Africa, says response to the virus has put an end to the optimism, at least for now.
The fear they create, the what we call the aversion behavior on other people, on farmers, miners, workers, consumers, that's really reducing GDP by between 2% or so this year in Guinea, more like 3.4% in Sierra Leone and Liberia, which adds up. Those countries are not rich, obviously, so those proportions add up to around $359 million in our estimates for this year.
Next year, he says, could be worse. If the outbreak is not controlled, affected countries could lose over $800 million. In response, the World Bank is mobilizing a $400 million finance package for the three countries. The money will go toward providing emergency response equipment and building field hospitals and treatment centers. It will also help strengthen healthcare systems, including monitoring of the outbreak. And the funding will provide general budgetary support for the Ebola-stricken countries, which are redirecting scarce resources to fight the virus. The economic forecast for the rest of Africa stands in stark contrast to that of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Growth is projected for most African states, despite a drop in commodity prices and slow global economic growth. The World Bank attributes economic expansion to public spending on infrastructure, a buoyant services sector, and a rebound in agricultural production for both export and domestic markets. Poonam Chuanpol is the World Bank's lead economist for Africa. She mentions two low-income countries where growth has remained robust.
In Cote d'Ivoire, it's cocoa production, which is really all for export purposes, but also production in terms of rice output in Cote d'Ivoire. In Ethiopia, agricultural production has gone up, both because of productivity increases and higher production. Production is also being supported in Ethiopia with spending in infrastructure. And so it's a range of factors. But yes, agriculture is providing a strong impetus to growth.
Chuanpol says Africa is bypassing industrialization as a means of promoting growth and jobs. Propelling the continent forward are services like tourism, transport, financing and telecommunications, and extractive industries, like the mining of oil, gas, metals, and minerals.
The extractive sector growth, I think it's something that has the potential to provide benefits to the rest of the economy. To the extent that governments are able to get revenues from this and are able to redistribute it in terms of, spending it in infrastructure or for spending it for social programs to help, poor people, there are obviously benefits that can be derived from the extractive sector.
The World Bank says the manufacturing sector in Africa is lagging, but can contribute to growth. Its economists say for the continent, that means improving the business climate, curbing fiscal deficits, guaranteeing affordable energy, lowering transport costs, and building a skilled labor force. I'm William Eagle in Washington.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Eighteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The Associated Press reports that a self-monitoring program will begin for everyone traveling to the U.S. from the three West African countries affected by Ebola. And Guinean President Alpha Conde has called on the nation's retired doctors to serve in the fight against Ebola. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. The World Health Organization says tuberculosis remains one of the world's deadliest communicable diseases. 1.5 million people died of the disease last year. What's more, the WHO says better data collection indicates there are about 500,000 more cases than previously estimated. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
The WHO's Global TB Report says about 9 million people developed the disease in 2013. More than half were in Southeast Asia and the Western Pacific. About one quarter were in Africa. The populous countries of India and China accounted for 24% and 11% of the cases, respectively. Of the 1.5 million who died of TB last year, 360,000 were also HIV positive. The report says TB ranks as the second leading cause of death from an infectious disease worldwide after HIV. Dr. Joanne Carter is head of Results Educational Fund and vice chair of the Stop TB Partnership Coordinating Board.
This year's report notes that TB mortality and rates of TB infection continue to decline slowly. But critically, however, for the first time, the report also includes the outcome of new, more intensive data gathering on the epidemic, revealing what many of us had feared, that the TB epidemic is even bigger than we thought, and that several hundred thousand more people globally are sick with TB, and several hundred thousand more people are dying of this preventable, treatable disease every year than we knew previously.
The Global TB Report says multidrug-resistant TB, or MDR-TB, remains a crisis. There were 480,000 new cases in 2013. It remains difficult to treat, and cure rates are described as poor. Severe epidemics of MDR-TB are reported in Eastern Europe and Central Asia. Meanwhile, extensively drug-resistant TB, or XDR-TB, is even more expensive and more difficult to treat. It is now reported in 100 countries.
In the case of the growing global threat of drug-resistant TB, thanks to new diagnostic tools, we're now better able than ever before to identify multidrug-resistant TB. But treatment is failing to keep up, and we're seeing a widening gap with tens of thousands of people being diagnosed with MDR-TB on waiting lists to get life-saving drugs. And at the same time, over 70% of all people with MDR-TB go undiagnosed every year.
Carter says significantly more investment is needed for effective TB diagnosis, treatment, and prevention. However, she says, there is at least a $2 billion annual financing gap. Much of the funding comes from USAID and the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB, and Malaria.
There's also an urgent need for increased research and development investment, which is funded at only about a third of the estimated need to bring forward new tools already in the pipeline and make sure we're ready with future breakthroughs required to defeat TB.
The report says efforts to combat TB must be accelerated if 2015 global targets set within the context of the Millennium Development Goals are to be met. But there is some good news. The report says that globally, the TB mortality rate fell by about 45% between 1990 and 2013. The TB prevalence rate, the proportion of people in a population who are infected, dropped by 41% during the same period. The report adds that TB is slowly declining each year, and it is estimated that 37 million lives were saved between 2000 and 2013 through effective diagnosis and treatment. However, it says, given that most deaths from TB are preventable, the death toll from the disease is still unacceptably high. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Officials of the radical Islamist group Al-Shabaab report they executed by stoning one of their own yesterday. The fighter was identified as 18-year-old Hassan Ahmed Ali. He was accused of raping a woman at gunpoint on October 16th at Buloa Mako, a Shabab stronghold in Lower Shabelle region. A local Al-Shabaab governor said Ali's trial proves the group is capable of applying Sharia law equally to all. A Sharia court judge who verified that the defendant was married declared the defendant guilty of adultery as well as rape. Ali denied he held a gun on his victim, a 33-year-old woman. He claimed she had consented to having sex with him. The victim was awarded a 2-year-old hifar, which is equal to marriage dowry in the region. Ghanaians are struggling with crippling 12-hour power cuts across the country. Authorities are hoping a nearly completed gas processing plant could be the key to alleviating the country's energy woes. Chris Stein has more from Accra.
Ghanaians have been dealing with persistent power outages both in the capital, Accra, and in the countryside for months. the Electricity Company of Ghana recently warned it may have to resort to 24-hour power cuts. The situation has since improved, but Ghana still has a power deficit of 400 megawatts. The government is hopeful that a long-delayed natural gas processing plant in the village of Atwabo, in Ghana's west, will provide needed energy to the main utility Volta River Authority, or VRA, and help the cash-strapped country save money. Alfred Ogbami is a spokesman for the Ghana National Gas Company.
What Atwabo does is that once it comes on stream and at optimum operating level, we'll be producing enough gas, which is more efficient and effective, and at a much cheaper cost to the VRA for them to use to generate between 480 to 550 megawatts of electricity.
Ghana spends $3 million every day on crude oil imports for its plants. That's cash it doesn't have. President John Dramani Mahama's administration is seeking money from the International Monetary Fund to put the economy back on course after the cedi currency tumbled earlier this year, losing as much as 60% of its value against the dollar. Ogbami says gas from the Atwabo plant will cut the cost of oil imports in half.
It means further forex savings for the country as well, and further, if you like, provision of resources that could be directed to solve either the energy problems or problems in other sectors of the economy.
Ogbami says Ghana's power generation has been hampered by an unreliable supply of natural gas from Nigeria, low water levels in the country's hydroelectric dams, and maintenance work on existing plants. The Atwabo plant is expected to start receiving gas from Ghana's offshore Jubilee oil field next week.
The final phase of that process will be completed by next week, and the expectation as of now is that once complete, it should allow gas, barring any last minute each, it should allow gas to flow to the processing plant for us to do some initial tests.
The plant is not expected to keep the lights on completely in the country, but it will be a step towards improving the power situation in West Africa's second largest economy. Chris Stein for VOA News, Accra.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Chaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Niyama Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaks to VOA on the Ebola crisis.
I would want the people in West Africa to know that Ebola is real. Ebola kills. Early detection and prompt treatment can save lives. And I'm asking our people not to victimize or stigmatize survivors. Ebola is a challenge, but together we'll all be able to overcome it.
That was Sia Niyama Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaking to VOA Africa on the Ebola crisis.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at UpfrontAfrica.